You are listening to a summary of The End of Poverty, a book by Jeffrey D. Sachs.
This is an excellent book by one of today's most prominent development economists. Jeffrey D. Sachs has been at the forefront of the most significant economic turnarounds, for better or worse, of the past quarter century. He helped end hyperinflation in Bolivia, advised Poland on its emergence from communism, and counseled Russia, China, and Africa. On the basis of his extensive research and experience, he concludes that conventional economic solutions ignore some of the key factors responsible for poverty. Borrowing a page from physicians' diagnostic procedures, he shows how non-economic factors can have economic implications. Along the way, he exposes the lamentable hypocrisy of the developed world and the institutions allegedly working for the development of the poor world. As an advisor to the leadership of the United Nations, Sachs believes that organization should be strengthened. He is not a dispassionate economist and doesn't pretend to be. He has a plausible case to make and he presses it hard, maybe now and then too hard, in this effort to convince the prosperous that effective help for the impoverished is practical, at least under some circumstances. Get Abstract believes his well-informed, heartfelt book belongs on the reading list of anyone who hopes the world can become a better place.
Global situation. The history of economic development is full of surprises. Just a few centuries ago, global wealth distribution was fairly reasonable. No great gaps existed between extremely rich and extremely poor countries. Yet now, the world's wealth distribution is skewed. These are the approximate tallies. 1. 1 billion desperately poor people, mostly in Africa, live on the edge of survival. 2. 1.5 billion people at a subsistence level have hard lives characterized by such problems as lack of safe water. 3. 2.5 billion people in the middle-income category live mainly in cities, at a level of comfort that could include indoor plumbing, clothing, access to education, and maybe even a motorcycle or a car. 4. 1 billion people are rich, although even the relatively poor in developed countries are rich by global standards. What happened to create this world? Why does such an unjust distribution of wealth exist? Advances in technology allowed a few countries to move far ahead of the rest. These countries had relatively easy access to communication and transportation. They often had rich endowments of industrial raw materials, such as coal. They also had open cultural institutions and societies that fostered the development and transmission of knowledge. It is noteworthy that in the 15th century China had explored much of the world and had developed technologies that would later be critically important in the West. However, China closed itself to the outside world and fell behind. Economic growth has occurred everywhere on Earth. It is not true that the rich countries simply have despoiled the poor. Development has not been a zero-sum game with a few winners and many losers. The U.S. grew approximately 1.7% annually between the mid-19th century and the end of the 20th century. Over that period, African economies grew only 0.7% annually. Consistency and compounding make the difference, or at least a great deal of the difference. Modern economic growth has had several consequences. 1. Urbanization. Rising agricultural productivity means fewer people are needed on the farm. Life in cities makes commerce and knowledge exchange easier. 2. Social change. Static social hierarchies break down under the pressure of technological change, distribution of wealth, and such forces. 3. Gender role change. Women are able to work, earn, save, learn, and exercise power. 4. Family structure change. Families are smaller and dispersed. Fewer relatives live together. People have fewer children and invest more in those they have. 5. Specialization and division of labor. Specialization allows workers to master particular tasks or skills, increasing efficiency. The spread of technology is the single most important factor in world development, and globalization is a very great advantage in spreading technology. Before World War I, globalization and integration had developed so far that some thought wars were impossible. However, irrationally and inevitably, war came. World War II shattered the global project. The world could not begin to reintegrate until after it was over. Why some stay poor? Some countries, most notably in Africa, have seemed perversely resistant to wealth. What keeps them poor? Conventional wisdom says that Africa's unique cultural and political disadvantages stand in the way of wealth, including such factors as corruption, tribalism, lack of a work ethic, and worse. In fact, the extremely poor may stay poor precisely because they began poor, they lack capital, and cannot obtain it in any of its forms. 1. Human capital, such as the knowledge, skills, health, and food that enable people to be productive. 2. Investment capital, such as machinery, equipment, and technology. 3. Infrastructure capital, such as roads, waterworks, sanitation, electricity, and telecommunications. 4. Environmental capital, such as soil, ecosystems, water, climate, and resources. 5. Institutional capital, such as laws, systems, and government institutions. Societies need a surplus of each form of capital above the survival minimum. When people barely can feed themselves and must spend every moment trying to survive, they lack the time and resources to develop any other capital. Poverty itself is a key reason some countries remain trapped in poverty. Conventional economic thinking ignores this and other stark facts. When economists and policymakers try to prescribe solutions to development problems, they often fail to make a careful diagnosis. The causes of development or underdevelopment vary widely. The most common reasons countries fail to develop are: 1. Poverty itself. Poverty is a trap. Struggling for survival. The poor cannot save or invest. Therefore, they are unable to develop the capital necessary for growth. 2. Geography. The U.S. is a wealthy country, but it also is lucky. America has good harbors, navigable rivers, open spaces, and rich soils. Countries that are hemmed in by mountain ranges, landlocked, or otherwise geographically handicapped, consequently face high costs of transportation as well as barriers to communication. 3. Fiscal. Governments may not have the money to provide basic public services, such as healthcare, infrastructure, and education. Debt overhang. The need to pay past debts is one of the most onerous burdens on the poor. Debt forgiveness was important to development programs in post-war Germany, post-communist Poland, and elsewhere. 4. Governance. Governments must be honest, astute, responsible, and able to act. Governmental failures can be devastating to economic development. 5. Culture. Cultural attitudes and practices may suppress women and ethnic minorities, feed hostilities and rivalries, and even lead to genocide. 6. World politics. Trade sanctions or barriers in wealthy countries fall heavily on the populations of countries caught in the poverty trap. 7. Failure to innovate. A small country can mean a limited market. And that, in turn, means little incentive to innovate. Political systems may create disincentives to invention by expropriating or failing to protect the innovator's economic benefits. But innovation does not have to be homegrown. Helped by geography, such as coastal access or navigable rivers, East Asian countries imported technological innovation by attracting foreign investors. 8. Demography. Poor families may have many children in the hope that one or two will survive. In countries where disease and other dangers threaten children's lives, this is a rational choice. Yet, a big family may not have the money to educate all of its children. The consequence may be that one child gets educated, but the rest stay poor. What is to be done? Ending extreme poverty in our time is possible. Those caught in the poverty trap need help. The most effective form of aid arrives as targeted investments that address an individual country's specific development capital needs. Depending on a country's particular handicaps, this may take the form of, among other permutations, agricultural technology, education, human capital, or health services. In Africa, for example, malaria is a deadly, very common scourge. Of course, it was an affliction in southern Europe and the southern US until quite recently. Yet, African malaria is particularly difficult to conquer. In countries with the kind of disease-bearing mosquito that will bite both cattle and people, the chances of a mosquito passing malaria from one human to another are much lower than in countries with the kind of mosquitoes that bite only people. Africa, unfortunately, has the latter type. Although mosquito nets and insecticides could drastically reduce, if not eliminate, malaria in Africa, it takes capital to provide them, though not a great deal of capital. Rich countries could eliminate extreme poverty in poor countries with targeted investments in the following areas. 1. Agriculture, such as fertilizers, equipment, irrigation, seeds and storage facilities. 2. Health, such as village clinics with obstetric services, medications, mosquito nets, insecticides and AIDS treatments. 3. Education, such as schools, adequate nutrition for children so they can learn, vocational education, and technology like mobile phones and computers. 4. Power and communications, such as electricity, roads and telephones. 5. Water and sanitation. Safe drinking water is indispensable, and clean latrines can make an enormous difference in public health. Presently, rich countries give a minuscule amount to the poor, and they give it in a peculiarly ineffective, self-serving way. Much so-called assistance is sent in the form of commercial credits that do little more than put money in the pockets of politically influential companies in developed countries. Some aid funding goes to consultants, also from developed countries. Some is channeled through multilateral institutions, such as the International Monetary Fund, that have proven ineffective and sometimes act as mere debt collectors for global banks. Countries such as the US have made promises of aid and then reneged. It is time to keep the promises. It is time for a different approach. 9 steps could solve the problem of extreme poverty in the foreseeable future. 1. Make the commitment to eliminate poverty. Under the Millennium Development Goals, the world committed to cutting poverty in half by 2015. This pledge is behind schedule. Society should make a firm commitment to eliminate extreme poverty altogether by 2025. 2. Plan action. The Millennium Development Goals are specific and quantified. But the world must develop planned action steps to reach them. 3. The poor must speak. Democracies in the underdeveloped world must find their voices and speak loudly and clearly to demand justice. 4. The United States must lead responsibly. The U.S. must champion the end of poverty and must work cooperatively and collaboratively with other countries. 5. Reform and redeem the IMF and World Bank. These institutions have experience and knowledge capital, but have been managed to suit the interests of rich lenders. It is time to put them at the service of the poor. 6. Make the United Nations stronger. Rich countries, notably the U.S., have refused to give the UN the authority and power it requires. 7. Tap the power of science. With help from private philanthropy and government research centers, scientists should focus on problems of the poor. Market forces are not enough to encourage such research because the poor cannot pay for what they need. Science tends to focus on the problems of people who can pay for research. 8. Develop sustainably. Ending poverty protects the environment. 9. Make it personal. Individuals in democratic countries must make personal, heartfelt commitments to the goal of poverty reduction by doing what is necessary at the ballot box to bring about that result. The developed world is not responsible for the poverty of the poor. The poor are not poor because they have been despoiled. Yet the developed world will benefit from ending the problem of poverty. A world without desperately poor people struggling at the margin of survival will be safer and more prosperous. If justice is not enough, perhaps self-interest will motivate the rich to do what is right.